kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Cole's going to be here later on in the show, but for now, it's that time of the year again. It's Wrasslecast season. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. We're here to talk about the greatest wrestling in the world. Obviously, the best and most consistent brands on the planet. We'll be fighting for brand supremacy this weekend.
Yeah, this is going to be a hell of a weekend. We should point out that we are recording this on Thursday, like usual, so this is before SmackDown.
It is before SmackDown, and it is before teams have been formally announced for
NXT.
NXT's, you know, team participants in the Survivor Series matches. On some level, I wonder if it's just whoever survives War Games.
Whoever's not injured.
Like, my God, the NXT crew is putting in some freaking work this weekend with a big NXT TakeOver War Games on Saturday, and then immediately many of them competing the next night in Survivor Series.
It's pretty crazy. Not to mention, you know, they were there on Monday, they had the show on Wednesday, they're gonna be there tomorrow on SmackDown.
Yeah, they've been all over the shows like all month. Adam Cole has had one hell of a month.
Seriously, holy shit, Adam Cole.
He has been wrestling his ass off since a plane had some kind of mechanical failure in Saudi Arabia.
Oh yeah, mechanical. I heard it was completely mechanical.
Very mechanical. That's
nothing
the story
shady, no shenanigans.
Yeah, that's the story that should be everyone should stick to. Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, it led to a really awesome Raw or SmackDown live in Buffalo, like 10 minutes away from me, that I was like, I'm not going to go to fucking TV tapings suck because there's just so many commercials and they're very promo heavy. And it's just like, I don't want to go to do that on a Friday night. I'm just like, no. Then it turned out that
it was one of the best shows of the year.
It turned out to be one of the best shows of the year. And NXT was in the house and I could have seen Adam Cole versus Daniel Bryan live and in person.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Next
in a few
time.
Weeks, it'll be up on the WWE Network to watch there for free. Boy.
Oh, man. Anyway, should we get to this? War Games is first on Saturday.
Hooray!
Four matches have been announced. No clue if they're going to add another one or not. But
I could see an addition of a cruiserweight title match. But they do have two War Games matches, and those are not short.
No.
So I can still see an addition of a cruiserweight championship match now that that title has been sort of revived on NXT. Not that it was doing poorly before, but I feel like it has
new life.
It has new life, and so does Leo Rush, the person holding it. Just like also has new life after being speaking for Bobby Lashley, who has also taken a turn.
Man, what the fuck happened with Lashley?
Dude, I don't know what's going on. I don't want to talk about it. Stick to the script.
All right, the script stipulates that we talk about War Games.
War Games!
We'll go in the order that they have them on Wikipedia. That's what we usually do, so we'll go in reverse order. The first match, presumably, is going to be Pete Dunne versus Killian Dane versus Damian Priest, a triple threat match to determine the number one contender for the NXT Championship the next night at Survivor Series against Adam Cole.
Yeah, geez, Cole, I hope you weren't hoping to just, like, hide in one of the Survivor Series teams and just, you know, have an easy night, brah.
No.
After War Games. Adam Cole gets to continue his rip and tear. But anyway, this isn't about Adam Cole. This is about Pete Dunne, Killian Dane versus Damian Priest. Boy, do I not care for Damian Priest at all.
Me neither. And that's what makes me think he's going to win.
I think Pete Dunne is going to win because one of these three is a good guy and I don't see them running a heel versus heel match on Survivor Series. against Cole.
So Damian's kind of been a tweener, though. He's been going after both of them.
He sucks. I don't think anyone wants to see that yet. Like, he's barely been around, and I have yet to be impressed with Mr. Damian Priest. And Killian Dane just came back and has just been kind of schluffing around and heavy breathing, you know. But I think if you're going to have a good challenger in a hell of a match at Survivor Series, Pete Dunne wins. Overcomes the odds.
I forgot to get a notepad. Gotta get a notepad so I can keep track of what I fucking pick for winners.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah, I forgot to do that too, and I'm just going to keep it in my brain dome.
Keep
I guess.
It in the brain.
Oh, there's my notebook. Hey. Maybe I will crack it open.
So I think Damian Priest is getting the nod. You're going with Pete Dunne.
Yes. Peter Dunne.
Peter Q. Dunne.
Of British strong style.
It would be nice to see him back in the title picture. I think he had his massive NXT UK championship reign, and then he lost it to Walter, and then he's just kind of been floundering.
Yeah, well, it's like, where do you go from there? I mean, that was a hell of a long run he had for well over a year. So, you know, he can kind of work the mid-card a little and go from there.
I guess we'll find out. But next yep. match is Matt Riddle versus Finn Balor. The returning Finn Balor, the newly heel-turned Finn Balor. This is going to be a hell of a match, but the first question, do you think we get Demon Balor or just Finn Balor?
I don't think we're going to see Demon Balor for long, long time. I don't think that's going to be part of his shtick, so long as he's on this heel run. Because that's, like, too popular and cool. Like, that's always been part of his persona since joining WWE pretty much from day one, and it's always been a crowd pleaser. So I just don't see him doing that anymore. Maybe he'll start doing some different dress-up gimmicks, but I don't think the Demon's going to be a thing.
No? Who do you think takes this match?
I have to think that Finn is going to win. Finn to win. I have to think this is going to be Finn versus Johnny Gargano before Johnny got hurt. I feel like with Finn returning to NXT, I think you got to give him a solid big win to keep him at the top of the card. And, like, it's not going to hurt Matt Riddle to lose.
No, not at all.
Like, that dude is doing well.
Bro.
And it is just a matter of time until he is
wasted, you know, on the main roster.
Challenging for that some title somewhere. Man, that dude needs to fight Goldberg and
I wish that happens. I hope to God that they come to their senses and they get Goldberg to do a match with Riddle to put him over.
Yeah, I'm not your bro.
whatever bro.
Yeah, so I think Riddle takes the loss here. I love how the crowd is chanting his name to the cadence of Goldberg.
I know. That's so good.
Amazing. That, yeah.
Seeing him do spears and jackhammers. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Finn wins in what could be the match of the night.
You think so? You think this could be match of the night?
Could be. I mean, it's the only singles match on the card.
We got two war games, and war games are usually crazy.
Yeah, but those could get messy and slow, depending, so.
I guess we'll find out, because the first of the two, allegedly, is the men's War Games match, which sees the Undisputed Era of Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong taking on Tommaso Ciampa, Keith Lee, Dominik Dijakovic, and a mystery partner. Ooh. Who do you think partner is?
Well, I certainly hope that it's the Velveteen Dream returning from injury after getting injured by the era a few weeks ago. If he is well enough, I mean, he was actually hurt. It's been a real bummer, I think, that he hasn't been able to be involved in the brand supremacy shenanigans to this point, but maybe it's a blessing in disguise because he is a precious resource that needs to be protected at all costs. Yeah. So you could see that. I did see someone throwing out that maybe Kevin Owens will show up to fill in the slot after getting attacked by the Undisputed Era on Monday. But but my feeling is that it's the Dream.
See, I'm hearing that the Dream is still injured at least through the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's legit injury or storyline injury, but you never know.
Could be, well, Johnny is injured, so not Johnny.
I think it's going to be someone who's new to NXT.
Yeah?
Yeah. There's,
that
you know,
doesn't
we've,
make sense.
We've had rumors for a couple of weeks now that John Morrison signed back with WWE.
Oh, true.
People are speculating it might be him.
Yeah, I feel like it has to be someone who has some kind of beef with the Undisputed Era, at least, though. And some roots in NXT. I mean, like, a debut would be cool, but I don't think it would make sense. But, yeah, I guess. Trying to think.
I think it's going to be someone new to NXT.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know.
We will find out.
Yeah, it's always fun to have a mystery partner slot.
And there's going to be a lot of mysteries in Survivor Series.
Thank you. Well, you know, some of them might be cleared up in the next
day.
The next day, but we'll see.
But we're recording on Thursday. Yes.
Maybe they bring in, you know, salty Drew McIntyre. Remember, he received the initial super kick from the formation of the Undisputed Era back at that takeover a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's a cool, yeah, I don't know.
It'll be interesting, but who do you think wins this match? Undisputed Era or Team Ciampa?
Oh, man. Well, you know, Undisputed Era, they won their first War Games and they lost last year's War Games. I feel like they are due for another win, but also it's kind of easy to see one of the lesser Undisputed Eras getting beat by Ciampa. So, because it's not an elimination match. Like, once they're all in there, it's first fall to a finish.
Yeah.
So, I
wish it was elimination. That would have been so much better.
Okay, yeah, then it's fucking do the whole thing backwards. a little too much. Yeah, I think the good guys win, I'm going to say.
You're going with Ciampa.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Team Ciampa.
I am going with the
Undisputed
Era. These
are both really
era.
Hard to pick. Yeah, that's not like a wild choice. Like,
this could go either way. I think a lot of it's going to come down to who the fourth entrant in Team Ciampa is. Mm-hmm. If it's someone like Flash in the Pan, like, they could get pinned easily.
That's true, yeah.
But if it's like if it's someone huge, like, there's people trying to speculate that it might be fucking Edge.
That seems ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. But if it's someone like him.
Calm down, guys. Calm down. Like,
you heard the rumors that Edge was supposedly cleared, right?
That's what has been speculating since he got contact at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's been a buzz, like, oh shit, like,
He did a move.
Like, is he cleared? Like, you know, Daniel Bryan came back. Anyone can.
Pretty much.
So, yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, the fourth and final match on the card is the Women's War Games match, the first ever War Games match for females, setting the bar high, I would presume, with Rhea Ripley, Candice LeRae, Tegan Nox, and Mia Yim taking on Shayna Baszler, Io Shirai, Bianca Belair, and Kaylee Ray. I got to go with Baszler's team on this.
Yeah, that was my pick as well. Just because Shayna should really never lose ever.
She is too goddamn good. Like, don't forget, last year we were doing these and you're like, oh, Baszler's gotta lose. And I'm like, no, I think she's a solid heel. This is gonna go for a while, and it's been going for a while, and she has become such a dominant, awesome champion.
Yeah, she's not lost since then. She only lost that one match to Kairi Sane. Well, you know, at the time, the whole thought was like, oh, she's going to get called up to the main roster. But, like, I guess that's not really a thing anymore so much, because
they are a main roster now.
They are, yeah, all parts are equal. Well, one could look at it that way. But, yeah, I mean, there is potential for shenanigans here, all right? So
very true.
Mia Yim had been propositioned to join Shayna's squad, so maybe Mia Yim is a sleeper agent. You know, Dakota Kai got snubbed to be on Rhea Ripley's team.
I think she's maybe the one who beat everyone up the other week, too.
Yeah, so she could intervene, possibly, or it could be the fake swerve where she intervenes on behalf of the good guys.
Inadvertently causes them to lose. Yeah.
Well, you know, you probably see the lesser horsewomen show up, Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke, and then maybe Dakota comes out and beats they asses off, beats their asses off, you know, runs them off. I guess there is some potential for someone from another brand to show up and interfere. That could be lording over this whole card, but I feel like Triple H would want to keep this free of that garbage.
Yeah, I'm thinking NXT is going to be a strictly NXT show. I don't see any interbrand shenanigans happening on NXT, but
yeah,
we could be wrong.
It happens literally every time we do this.
It does.
Our
results are fucking awful.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, so yeah, my pick is Shayna's team. I mean, both these teams are kind of thrown together, but I feel like, you know, when in doubt, go with Shayna. And not to, you know, short sell, that Kaylee Ray, the UK women's NXT UK champion, is there as well. So there's two champions on one side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think Baszler's team gets it.
Yep.
So okay, we are in agreement with Baszler and Balor, and we are in disagreement with Undisputed Era against Team Ciampa and the Triple Threat. So I guess we'll see what happens and see how our records are come Monday.
Yeah.
I'm guessing horrible. But the next day, Sunday, is Survivor Series, again on the WWE Network for only $9.99 a month. They have 8 matches listed for this one so far. I was kind of thinking we might see a cruiserweight title match on here instead of NXT.
You could, but well, I mean, they literally call it the NXT Cruiserweight Championship now, so.
True.
You know.
They need a new belt. They really need a new belt, because that purple one is ugly as sin.
Yeah. Should revise that at some point, I guess. Speaking of getting the picks wrong, last year when we did Survivor Series, if you recall, we did a Survivor Series. There was only 2 brands fighting for supremacy that year, but we were like, oh, well, okay, well, one brand has to win 4 and the other brand will, you know, win the tiebreaker. And as it turned out, Raw won all of them except for the tag match, and that is apparently only because they fucked up in the tag match. So,
and it was on the pre-show.
And it was on the pre-show, so they just chose to not count it anyways. Oh, my.
Yeah, we did great last year.
Yeah, well, yeah, we gamed ourselves and not thinking like, oh, well, it's, you know, they're going to do the thing where it's close, and then, no, we're just going to have Raw win fucking the whole thing. Oh, okay, well, I guess that's a way you could go, but this year, you know, they changed things up. They've injected NXT into it, which is probably only for the better, though also makes the card extremely heavy with triple threat matches. My God. Ugh.
Yeah, there's 3 triple threat matches, 2 5-on-5-on-5 triple threat matches, and then 3 championship matches that are not interbrand.
Yeah, and I think that's for the better that they broke out the main champion matches, and they're actually having 3 title defenses on the show. That's pretty cool. I think it would benefit. I mean, it would, not that WWE likes good ideas, but I think it would benefit them a lot if they, you know, do your traditional Survivor Series matches, like 1 or 2 of them, and then just fill the rest of the card with like some cool inner brand matchups instead of doing the whole like, tag champs fight each other, you know, mid-card champs fight each other, champs fight each other, even though that led to some cool Brock Lesnar matches the past few years against Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles, respectively. Those were good fucking matches.
They were.
They were great matches.
Motivated Brock is good Brock.
He's best Brock. Motivated Brock is like one of the best wrestlers of all time.
He really is.
He really is. And even Lazy Brock is still pretty good. But, yeah, I guess we should get into it.
Yeah, let's start with the championship matches. We're going to have Adam Cole defending against the winner of the triple threat match. I don't care who it is, I think Cole's winning this.
I think that's correct, unless they're just trying to, like... the only way I could see it going otherwise is if they do, like, a really, like, short-term title change. You know, like, Pete Dunne wins it, because that's who I expect to be there. And then, like, Adam Cole literally wins it back on TV before Christmas, just because the person who actually is going to win the title from Adam Cole is Tommaso Ciampa. He's got to get Goldie back. That has to be... It's the end of the injury redemption story, is to get back the title he never lost, and then eventually wrap it all the way back around again to finish the fight with Johnny, right? Like, that's where it has to go eventually.
I would think so.
They never got to blow off in the 2 of 3 falls match, and it just feels like that's where things should go. Not to bog down the whole title scene with more Ciampa and Gargano stuff, but boy, was that good. I don't mind
the title scene being, quote, bogged down by Ciampa and Gargano, because, you know, 5-star matches are still pretty good to watch on TakeOver.
Yeah. it's,
I don't mind them. They're pretty good.
Not exactly a terrible fate, but yeah, Adam Cole has just been, they've really done a good job of putting a spotlight on him in the last month, and I think he just continues to roll.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good, baby. Yep. Next match, we've got The Fiend, Bray Wyatt.
His real name is Austin Jenkins. What a dork.
Really?
Yeah. God, what a... get out of here. Austin Jenkins, baby. Kayfabe.
Anyway, The Fiend, Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan. I think Bray Wyatt just wins this one easily with the stupid red filter and all.
Oh, God, I hope not. I hope that they don't do that. They gotta stop doing that, because it's terrible. Yeah, I mean, like, Hell in a Cell was awful, and he should have won it there. Instead, they had him win it in parts unknown. But he did win it, finally, and that's a good thing, and I think this should be a great match, and I hope they... Like, they didn't do the red lights at SummerSlam, right?
I know.
So don't... Just cut it out. It's bad. Stop
it. It's ugly. It's distracting. Well, which they means did- they're definitely going to do it.
They did, like, a Fiend dark match in the past week. And, like, one of the fans in the arena just posted a picture of the ring. They're just like, you can't even see anything because the red lights. People are just leaving. Like, it's horrible for everyone. Just cut it out. It doesn't add anything. Stop it. But, yeah, Bray wins, obviously.
Yeah, it's definitely way too soon to take the title off him.
Yeah, I mean, the word on the street is that he's going to hold it till WrestleMania. You're gonna need one heck of a large canine to take that belt off of him, I think. Speaking of injury redemption stories. But yeah, I think the Fiend's gonna hold it for a while. Finally, like, Bray Wyatt being champion and getting a decent run with it.
Yeah. Long overdue, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, God, they just they keep screwing that poor guy up. Like, since WrestleMania 30, like, it's just been downhill and uphill and downhill and uphill. But The Fiend is pretty great, and just so long as they can keep themselves in check, I think it'll continue to be great, and Daniel Bryan's involved, so of course it's going to be a great match.
Yeah. And then third championship match, we've got Brock Lesnar defending against Rey Mysterio. Where do you see this one going?
All right. This is a no-holds-barred match for the WWE Championship.
No-holds-barred. So anything goes.
So anything goes. So any, you know, large former UFC heavyweight champions could run out and interfere in the match on behalf of their small masked buddies, you know? So, yeah, like, the possibility here, I mean, you know, the obvious possibility is, like, okay, Brock just wrecks and wins and we move on with our lives. Or there is the option that, I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact here that while Rey is a small man, he is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. All time, easily. That dude is incredible, and he still is. I could easily see them, like, giving Rey, or, you know, Rey wins, because of something to do with the no-holds-barred stipulation. You know, maybe Cain Velasquez interferes. Maybe Dominic interferes. You know, Eddie Guerrero's son, Dominic. interferes and Ray wins, but if Ray wins, he's probably holding the title no later than, say, the Royal Rumble. Maybe a little bit later than that, but I would say the Royal Rumble.
Before it's back to Lesnar, obviously.
Yeah, before it's back to Lesnar to, head into WrestleMania season. So I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say Ray wins.
Really? Because
I would like it. I would love to see Ray winning. It's probably incredibly fucking stupid to bet against Brock Lesnar, but I'm going to.
I originally had Ray written down on my sheet, but I changed my mind just because I have a feeling that either Kane or Dominic is going to turn on Ray.
Oh, Dominic.
I said when Dominic was first taken out on a stretcher, I said, I can't wait until he comes back and costs Ray a match.
It could be.
I could see
down the line.
Either that or Kane just being like, you know what, I can't beat him, so I'll join him, and he joins up with Lesnar. How fucking crazy would that be if Lesnar and Kane were a team?
I think he's busy being a mayor.
No, Kane Velasquez, you dork.
Oh, that Kane. I was definitely thinking Hellfire and Brimstone.
Should have said Velasquez.
Yes. I was like, why are you talking about Kane? I guess that is like WWE's, we don't know what to do, just send Kane out there. Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't be shocked either way.
At the least, they have put some doubt into the outcome of this match, so that's always fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens, but there are also the brand supremacy triple threat matches.
Yay!
As Heaven Smile comes into the chat, how are you doing, Heaven Smile?
Everybody cares about brand supremacy.
Yes. Well, let's go through these. AJ Styles, the U.S. champion, versus Shinsuke Nakamura, the Intercontinental champion.
Oh,
versus,
he still works there.
Yeah, and believe it or not. Yeah, he was on NXT, too. He showed up in sweatpants.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. I didn't watch NXT yet. I watched Dynamite instead.
Oh, man.
You Dynamite, out. I mean, did I, though?
Oh, my God. You fucking missed out.
I don't know. Everyone else kind of said the show was shit, so.
NXT? Nah, man. That show was the fucking revival against.
Except for that. For that part. But, otherwise it was a lot of, like, DQ finishes and other brands running in and.
I thought it was awesome. But then Roderick Strong, the North American champion, triple threat match. Where do you see this one going?
I think that, man, wow. I'm just like, when did Shinsuke win it? And we won it from Finn Balor. Right. At the Extreme Rules kickoff. He's had it for 129 days. What a reign. Man, that's like the longest reign since The Miz back in 2017.
Are you looking this up as you're doing it?
I opened up Wikipedia because I was just double checking when he had actually won it. to refresh my memory. I feel like he hasn't defended it since then. I imagine he has, but just feel like he hasn't really been on TV. Anyways, I think that AJ Styles is going to win.
I agree.
One way or another. Roderick Strong definitely is not winning. Shinsuke would only win in kind of one of those weird out-of-nowhere wins, like, say, when he won the Intercontinental Champion on the Extreme Rules kickoff show 129 days ago in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on July 14th.
Yeah, that was the thing that happened.
AJ Styles has a defense on Monday against Humberto Carrillo, and he has been, like, the most present of the champion. Well, I mean, Roderick Strong has obviously been present, but he's not winning. so I think just AJ Styles wins. Probably gets a pin on Roddy, I think.
You think Roddy's there to eat the pin?
I don't think he's there to eat the pin. I just think he might.
All right, so we are in agreement that AJ wins that one.
Yep.
The next match is Team Raw versus Team SmackDown versus Team NXT. On Team Raw, we have Seth Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, Randy Orton, and Ricochet. Team SmackDown has Roman Reigns, Mustafa Ali, who has his first name back, Braun Strowman, Yay. King Corbin, and Shorty G versus.
Oh, Team God, give him his name back.
Yes, versus Team NXT of TBA.
Okay, so
this is hard to call because we don't know who the fuck is in the match.
And it doesn't fucking matter. I think that Team NXT, I mean, in an ideal world, it would just be the Undisputed Era, but whoops, they have all the belts, so they're in all the other matches. So I imagine it is going to be a mishmash. It's going to be Team Ciampa plus Riddle. That's my guess. It's basically going to be Tommaso Ciampa's War Games team with Keith Lee, Dijakovic, Mystery Partner, plus Matt Riddle. That's kind of my thought on the matter. Survivor Series, classic Survivor Series elimination match where anyone can lose to a transitional move at any time. let's see. Who's going to get eliminated first? Will it be Shorty G? Will it just be... I wonder if they're going to do something in one of these elimination matches where just, like, one of the teams just loses all their members right off the bat, and it just goes straight to being, like, a 2v2, you know?
That'd be interesting.
They just shit all over one of the teams and just like, yeah, bye, Team NXT. Just get you back out of here. Sorry.
I just wonder if they're going to have each of the three teams have a member in the match at the same time, or if it's just going to be two with the random tags of the third team, which I fucking hate when they do that shit.
Yeah, it's a triple threat elimination match. I'm trying to... I mean, it goes either way in WWE, how they decide to do these. Just kind of on the night. It's like, oh, okay, is it going to be the two people and then someone else tags in, or are they going to do it three people in and then they have to tag out, or you can tag anybody? Who knows? Let's see. Who is going to win? I think I'm going to say Team SmackDown.
Really? Why?
Because Fox is going to want them to win a match.
A match.
A match. Well, I mean, look, if you look at their team, they got the big dog, they got Braun Strowman, and they have King Corbin. Yes, King fucking Corbin, who never loses. That's how he ended up being King Corbin. They definitely have, I mean, Roman Reigns alone, like, that's, if you're betting against Team SmackDown, you're betting against Roman Reigns, one.
I actually think Roman's going to get eliminated fairly early. I think he's going to pull a John Cena and go out early.
Okay, all right.
I think it's honestly going to come down to Braun and King Corbin winning it for Team SmackDown.
Okay, but you also think Team SmackDown, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. We both think Corbin will be surviving somehow because...
Fucking Corbin is going to... He might be the sole survivor, who knows?
Yeah.
Fucking Corbin, not King Corbin. Fucking Corbin.
Yeah, he'll get it. He'll, yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree.
Well, then they have the women's 5-on-5-on-5 triple threat elimination match. Team Raw has Charlotte Flair, Natalia, Asuka, Kairi Sane, and Sarah Logan. Remember her? Versus Team SmackDown of Sasha Banks, Carmella, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans, and Nikki Cross versus Team NXT TBA.
So I'm guessing, again, that this is going to be most of Team Ripley, plus, like, maybe Io Shirai and Bianca Belair. That's kind of my guess for that team. This one's a little harder to pick.
Yeah.
But I think Rhea Ripley, at least. I think Io Shirai. I think Bianca Belair, because they're going to want to showcase her. And then, I don't know, they this is where they could give Dakota Kai some shine this weekend. They could just put Team Kick on there. That would be cool. They could, you know, I mean, if you're flying out Kaylee Ray, you might as well use her again, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool if they, like, brought over Toni Storm or something like that, but I think she might be injured.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on that.
I don't think NXT's going to win it.
I don't think so either.
I think Raw's taking this one.
I think Raw's taking this one.
Yeah, between Charlotte and Asuka, I don't think either of those two are going to be eliminated.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I have to keep in mind here that, you know, this is main roster WWE where Asuka can lose to a transitional move and Carmella. but her greatest Achilles heel, which is Charlotte, is on her own damn team. So, though she did, and she tapped out the fucking worst sharpshooter in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Team Raw wins. I think Team Raw wins. Team SmackDown is really only... Well, they got Sasha Banks and Nikki Cross going for them, and Vince McMahon's undying love of Lacey Evans. I'm always happy to see Dana Brooke. I have a soft spot for her for some reason. I don't know. She's just fun and dorky.
I played her theme music before the show, so...
Nice.
If you were hanging out in our chat room before the show went live, you heard her music.
She does a really good no-handed cartwheel.
She does.
Like, it's very, very crisp. But, yeah, I think Team Raw just wins because Charlotte, Asuka, you know. Yeah, that seems like a pretty good reason right there, those two.
Yeah, we're both on Raw for that one then.
Yep.
So that is Raw with two wins so far. We're in agreement with all of these so far. The tag team match sees the Viking Raiders from Raw take on the New Day from SmackDown versus the Undisputed Era from NXT. And this one, I'm giving to NXT. I think this is the match that they win.
Yeah? Okay. I'm a little torn between the Viking Raiders and New Day. I don't think Undisputed Era is winning this one.
No?
Either. No. I mean, they could. They are sneaky, sneaky snakes. But I think I am going with Viking Raiders. I know that's a lot of Raw, but... Maybe it should be the New Day. I wish the Revival was in this match.
I know.
That would have been... I mean, then you have, like, the three best NXT tag champs of all time in a triple threat match. And I would
Which is
definitely
what it should Revival. Have fucking been. They shouldn't have put the belts back on New Day. I think they're just trying to make it up to taking the title off of Kofi that they gave them the tag belts. It should have been the Revival.
Yeah, I'm going to say New Day, though I'm really unsure of this one.
Yeah, I'm going with Undisputed Era.
Uh-huh.
All right, final match on the card looks to be the women's triple threat match that sees Becky Lynch, the Raw Women's Champion, take on Bayley, the SmackDown Women's Champion, versus Shayna Baszler, the NXT Women's Champion. Who do you see taking this one? This is the hardest pick for me because I... Like, my gut wants to say Baszler, and that's who I have written down, but I think they're going to give it to Becky.
I'm if you look at the shows page on WWE.com and the Survivor Series graphic they have up, they don't have Shayna in the graphic. There's just a yellow space in the middle. They just took her out and put Survivor Series in the middle. Anyways, I think out of any match on this card, the NXT should win and prove some brand supremacy. It is this one, and Shayna should win. Becky, I don't think, needs another feather in her cap.
She doesn't.
It is quite a full cap at the moment. Bayley, you know, could do with it as well. But I just feel like, man, like, for the past, I don't know, like, almost really since they instituted an NXT Women's Championship, like, the NXT Women's Championship has been the top women's title in all of WWE. I don't care what you say about the Raw and SmackDown women's titles. Like, I've always felt like the best women's wrestler has been the one that holds that NXT championship. Especially when Asuka was champion. And,
oh, goddamn
and now,
right.
And now again, when Shayna is champion, like, that is, like, the NXT women's division is insane! Insane! Like, with how thick it is that they can fill up a War Games match and they still have women like left on the side where you could be like, oh yeah, they could be in it, I guess. They're lower card, you know, girls like Tamara Conti and et cetera. Like all the women that are actually developing on the show, you know, I think that, you know, you give Shayna a win here and you are, cause like who is going to challenge Becky? You know, Becky needs challengers.
Sarah Logan.
And it's not Sarah Logan. And it, like, you can't just run Charlotte at her. You shouldn't just run Charlotte at her again. God damn it. I know you want to. I know you can't wait. I'm still sick of it. Asuka seems like another good choice because Asuka is the last one to beat Becky. Asuka, you know, beat her for the title in the ladder match last year, beat her at the Royal Rumble. So it's like, you know, I think you need to have Becky face some adversity, like heading into WrestleMania, like who's going to challenge her? And don't say Ronda Rousey's coming back. I don't want to hear that. Keep that to yourself, please. So, yeah, I think this is a place to actually put your foot down for some brand supremacy for NXT and have it matter and have her have Shayna win.
Yeah, I can't agree more. Shayna, just she's the dominant champion right now. You know, when she showed up on Raw and on SmackDown, it fucking mattered.
Yeah.
Like, people took notice that, hey, Shayna Baszler's here. Even the people who were casual fans, they were kind of like, hey, this person seems like a really big deal. I need to find out more about her.
Yeah, she's not a joke. Shayna is like, yeah, she is Ronda Rousey, except with she's been training. She gets like the psychology of wrestling a lot better than, not that like Ronda was bad at it, but there was, you know, you could definitely see where she was green still, you know. Like, say, when you're picking your shoulder up off the mat, when you're in the winning pinning combination at WrestleMania. You know, Shayna is just so goddamn good.
Yeah.
And I think she should win this. Of course, the match I really want to see, the dream match, is Asuka versus Shayna.
I was just going to say, who would win Asuka versus Shayna?
That is extremely hard to call, but I hope they get there someday. I hope that they pull Asuka back to NXT to challenge for that title at some point. But
me too.
Obviously, they already have plenty of worthy challengers just waiting in the wings to win.
And Asuka never lost her championship either.
She never lost her championship. She relinquished it so she could move on to the main roster, win
and
the Royal
she
Rumble,
was injured.
Then lose at WrestleMania, and then lose to Carmella.
Fucking Carmella.
And fade into obscurity. Then win the title again, and then look great, and then lose it to Charlotte right before WrestleMania, and fade into obscurity, and become a Kabuki Warrior, and then fade into obscurity. And then, oh shit, we should actually have them win the titles. And now she's on TV fairly... Well, we should have them win the titles, and we should have them turn evil. And now she's on TV every week.
Yeah.
So I can deal with that. And she has a great YouTube channel where she, like, cooks Japanese food in her backyard.
Does she?
Yeah, Kana-chan TV.
I'll have to check that out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I have no clue.
Like, it started out with her just, like, playing games, but, like, most of it lately has just been her, like, cooking Japanese cuisine.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. She's I love Asuka. She's the best.
Apparently, AJ Styles has a Mixer channel.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, if you're wondering who uses Mixer, we found out that it is AJ Styles.
It's the house that AJ Styles built. He is the face that runs the place, the champ that runs the camp.
Oh, man. But, yeah, that is Survivor Series. It seems like a really awesome card. I think TakeOver is going to be better, obviously, but having NXT on the main roster.
Is.
Yeah, having NXT show up on the, quote, main roster. I think it's going to turn into a really good Survivor Series.
Yeah, I mean, I could also see, like, I hope they don't just, like, skunk NXT because, you know, certain parties still view them as the lesser brand. Like, I think this is, even though I only called them to win the women's match, like, this is an opportunity where they should be spotlighting NXT. And if not winning matches, you know, they could be the last team eliminated in some of the triple threats, you know, the 5-on-5 triple threat matches, just to be like, hey, this is a serious brand. You guys should watch. They have been, trailing in the ratings on the Wednesday Night Wars.
They won this week.
They did win this week.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
By like 100,000.
Wow. Well, yeah. Good job, NXT. They were kind of fallen behind, but I guess it was a pretty big week, and they telegraphed that a lot of main roster people were going to show up, so see how that goes future weeks. But generally, they have not been keeping pace with AEW Dynamite not really for good reason. They're both awesome shows. Like, they're the best wrestling shows of the week. You should be watching both of them.
You should.
Like, I think anyone with their druthers is watching both of them. Oh, man.
But yeah, that is our WrestleCast. I guess we should get Cole in here, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Woo!
Might as well. We'll get her involved here. We'll talk some news. It is dialing her now.
Okay, I'm going to run and refill my water real quick.
You go and do that. Cole, how are you doing today?
Hi.
How are you doing today, Cole?
This is a water-free zone. You may not go and acquire water. You have to go acquire pop.
pop. Oh God. I have my I have my Mountain Dew Maui Burst, so I've got my pop.
I keep forgetting to tell Dave that that one's a thing and he should try it.
If you could find it.
You said it's at Dollar General, yeah?
Yeah, if you can find it.
We got Dollar Generals off the nose. Like, there was even a rumor they were going to put one in our tiny ass town.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, me neither.
Alston Prime says he's drinking White Out. You son of a bitch. I want White Out so bad. I never got to say goodbye to Mountain Dew White Out.
I always figured
that it would be back. I never got an opportunity to have one final farewell bottle. Oh man, I miss it.
I'm back.
Sad face.
Missed you too, Tim. How are you?
It was great.
So yeah, news of the week. Let's see. I guess the big news this week, Tim, I know you were excited about this, but Half-Life Alyx was announced for Steam VR. It's releasing March 2020 and will be playable on the Valve Index, the Vive, Oculus, and Windows MR headsets, so they're covering all the platforms. Tim, what are your thoughts on Half-Life Alyx?
I mean, it's this is wild. I don't know if y'all know this, but like Half-Life 3 specifically, but Valve making Half-Life games or any games in general has kind of been a joke for the better part of the last 10 years, yeah. Really. They kind of fade, you know, they never had a robust release schedule to begin with, but they sort of faded away from actively developing anything that wasn't Dota and the Steam store after the release of the Orange Box.
Now, Portal 2, I think, was the last big one.
Yeah, Portal 2 was the last big one. That's true. There was Portal 2 in the early 20-teens, but it just seemed like Valve just wasn't that about making games. And here we are, out of nowhere this week, Valve was like, hey, we're happy to announce Half-Life Alyx, an all-new Half-Life game exclusively for VR. And it was just like, what? Like,
I had to check the calendar. I thought it was April Fool's.
Like, it is actually happening. Like, I was just numb when I read it. I was like, yeah, right. Fucking come on.
This is bullshit. But I don't
sure
believe
shit,
you.
Yeah, they put out a trailer today. You know, I'd heard the speculative joke, I guess I'll say, that like, oh, Valve should do Half-Life 3 and release it as an exclusive for VR. I mean, it's not Half-Life 3, but it is a Half-Life, and it is exclusive to VR, mm-hmm. And they put out a trailer today, which looks pretty phenomenal.
It does. Cole, did you see the trailer at all?
I saw bits and pieces, but I didn't have a chance to watch the whole thing. Also, I'm not attached to Half-Life like the rest of the world, so...
No. I'm not...
I played, that's a thing.
I played Half-Life 2, and I did really like Half-Life 2. I'm not, like, crazy for Half-Life. It just has such a general mythical status as a game franchise that it was just like, whoa, it's happening. And they're doing it as a VR experience, which, you know, I don't have VR. I don't have a PC VR set, and at the same time that this does look like something else, like, I don't think it's going to make me invest in a PC VR setup, but still, it's just like crazy that it's happening, crazy that it looks great. I'm just like excited to kind of hear about it, hear impressions and see more about the game.
I'm curious if they would ever consider bringing it to PlayStation VR, because that's the only VR I can run. Lord
yeah,
knows if
maybe,
I hooked
like,
the headset up to my computer, it would just implode. We would get a black hole in Berwick, PA.
Yeah. Maybe like way down the road, but it's tough to, I think it'll just stay exclusive to PC. I mean, I think they're definitely going to, they, you know, it's not going to move hardware for me, but it is going to move hardware for some people for sure. Some people are going to be like, okay, this is time. I'm going to find something, you know, there'll surely be some good deals around the holidays, you know, pick something up.
Speaking of moving hardware, Pokemon Sword and Shield has sold over 6 million units.
Oh, that's weird. I thought no one was buying that game.
In its
launch weekend. I thought there was a big boycott and no one was going to buy it.
I didn't buy it because I'm not a Pokemon fan.
I bought it. I'm not a huge Pokemon fan, but I haven't played one since X.
I see it in the store and I'm kind of like, maybe I should give it a go. And then I'm like, I don't play half the shit I buy anyway.
Yeah. That's the right attitude, but
yeah.
For me, it was like, oh, I can play this game. I mean, my child loves Pokemon. We've been playing Pokemon Go with him all summer. He loves watching the cartoons. So it's like, oh, here's like an actual video game we can play on the TV together, you know, too. I mean, he's 4.5, but I can definitely put a controller in his hands and guide him through the menus in this game pretty easily. So it's something we can have a lot of fun with playing it together, and it does seem pretty great. I was one of the 6 million.
So there were 5,999,999 other people who bought it besides you.
Give or take a couple thousand.
Maybe. Give or take like a dozen or two.
Yeah. To be fair, Pokemon is one of the reasons that we're considering getting the kids a Nintendo for Christmas.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because number three is like Pokemon is her world right now.
Yeah. I mean,
literally, she said the only thing she wanted for her birthday was Pikachu. And I'm just like, well, shit, there's only one way to do that.
I don't think Pikachu exists. You know what does exist? Root Beer is my jam, subbing to the channel for the 7th month.
Thank you.
Poor Root Beer. You're such a good egg. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Root Beer is my jam. Awesome of you to sub to us once again. Everyone's showing up now. No Time for Games is showing up now. BX Latino Heat's showing up now. Now that the Razzlecast is over.
They were showing up.
Yeah, everyone's here for you, Cole.
Oh, gee, thanks, everybody. No hate, no hate.
Look, when you sound like this, then you can, you know. Why are my dogs barking?
Nah, I don't know. Why are your dogs barking?
Question of my life, right?
It's David's fault. He's supposed to be babysitting them, keeping them quiet.
So, Cole, since you're considering picking up a Switch for Pokemon, do you own a Roku device?
I have a Roku TV.
Because there's apparently a strange issue where the latest Pokemon game has caused select Roku devices to crash and enter a boot loop.
What?
Yes, Roku acknowledged the problem, said they were working on a fix. Apparently, Pokemon is sending out the same signal that Roku searches for remote controls.
Ah, shit.
And it's causing the Roku to crash and enter a boot loop.
Like, what is it looking for? That is it, that Pokeball controller thing? Is that what it is? That compatible with this? Is that
I
what
I don't
it,
know?
Huh.
I'm concerned now because, like, our whole premise was if we get a Switch, it would go in 2 and 3's room, and their TV is a Roku TV, it has Roku on it.
Well, I don't
not
know if
a,
any Roku TVs
device,
were affected
into the TV.
Yeah, I don't know if any TVs were affected.
Now I'm concerned.
Well, I'm sure that they already have
something
a patch out for
on.
It. This is something that's been out for a couple of days now. They may have already issued a patch for it, but if not, they are working on it, and I'm sure it will be fixed. They said that an easy solution is to just set your Switch to airplane mode. And then that fixes it.
That would do it.
There is something that cannot be fixed, though, and that is the launch of the Google Stadia.
Oh, that is a heck of a segue. Oh, man, what a disaster that has been.
Yeah, the Google Stadia launched this week. Believe it or not, it launched this week. This might be the first you're hearing about it.
It's like the early, you had to be an early adopter, one of their, like, pro buy-in. Not anybody, there's like a buy-in to playing it. It's not widely available, and it's certainly not fully functional to what they advertised, which they said not all the features are going to be there, but yeah.
Yeah, it's missing a lot of features. Some people are already reporting that the Stadia games have been overheating their Chromecast Ultras.
Oh, wow.
Overheating and shutting them off.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. On the bright side, they originally had a launch lineup of 12 games, but they expanded it to 22. Listen to all these amazing exclusives they have, like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Attack on Titan Final Battle 2, Destiny 2, Farming Simulator 2019.
We know there's only one. We know there's only one exclusive.
Yeah, we're getting there. Final Fantasy 15, Football Manager 2020, Grid. Here's the exclusive, Guilt. Cole, I know you were excited about that one.
Yeah, I was a little miffed that that was an exclusive.
Hopefully it won't be for long.
Look here.
And then they have stuff like Mortal Kombat 11, Metro Exodus, Rage 2, Tomb Raider from 2013 that I'm sure people are just dying to play for the first time here in 2019.
To pay full price for. Well, I don't know if it's full price, but to pay, four.
Yeah, pay for the game on top of the subscription. The pretty much at this point in time, it is a mandatory subscription.
Yes. Yep.
Because the free service won't be available until next year. Basically, the Stadia launched as a paid beta.
It's ucky. I mean, you get Destiny 2 for free.
And Samurai Showdown.
Oh, yeah, and Samurai Showdown. It's just like, everyone is kind of has the same opinion, is that, like, well, the streaming tech works. The games don't always run the way they should. But who exactly is this for that, like, has been dying to play, you know, AAA video games but doesn't own a console?
Yeah.
And is like, oh, finally, I could pay full price for, you know, like
for old games that I don't own,
or like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is, you know, the eighth sequel in a franchise, you know. It's just it just doesn't make a lot of sense for anybody. It's clearly like very shaky right now, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I think the news of Project X Cloud coming out of the XO19 event last week just shit all over Stadia's plans.
Yeah, I mean, like, Microsoft has a stronger base to build from. I mean, they just can start to weave xCloud into, you know, Game Pass service, and there you go.
Yeah.
All right, there's the first Game Pass mentioned for the week. Certainly not the last.
Game Pass, $9.99 a month for access to over 100 guaranteed games. Oh, man. But fucking Ultimate for $15. You can't go wrong with that. You can't.
Just so lay good. Down the shill.
I will indeed shill. Awesome Prime dropping. They time and prime, it rhymes. Dropping biddies. So stop 20 rapping. Biddies.
Dropping bits!
Thank you for the 20 biddies. And I will try to stop rapping. That's a naughty habit of mine over the years.
A naughty habit.
No one needs to hear those. Anyway, we mentioned Samurai Showdown. That's going to be coming to the Switch next year.
Cool.
Yeah, they announced that coming to the Switch Q1 of 2020. And if you pre-purchase it on the store, you get the Neo Geo Pocket version of Samurai Showdown 2.
What a game.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's such a cool pre-order bonus. I love when companies do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Other news. After 2 years away from the series, Toyota vehicles are coming back to Forza starting December 12th with the Series 17 update for Forza Horizon 4, with more cars supposedly coming in the future. But it's good to see Toyota back on board.
I guess. I don't play Forza.
Oh, you should play Forza Horizon 4.
Is it available on Game Pass?
You're goddamn right it's available on Game Pass.
Maybe I'll have to check it.
On PC and Xbox.
Oh, wow. How could I say no?
Seriously.
How much is that again? Remind me, regale me, sir.
Game Pass Ultimate's available for $14.99 a month. Ooh, it includes Game Pass, PC Game Pass, and Xbox Live Gold privileges.
Fantastic.
Such a deal. I love it.
What a steal.
So, yeah, play Forza Horizon 4.
I'll good put it stuff. In the queue. The queue is you lengthy. So much stuff to play.
A game that should not be in your queue, the 1.03 update for WWE 2K20 hit this week, and on PC, it corrupts your game save.
Oh, good lord.
Game's just heading nowhere but up, right? Everything's going great. I know it had a rocky launch, but good to see they're making it look better by comparison.
How do you fuck up such an already horribly fucked up game?
You just, whatever. I don't even.
The
they
few
don't know
people
what
they're doing. That are still
I
putting up
that
with the
that
game.
I suspect that is what they're saying about the game. Just whatever.
Yeah, probably.
Whatever. Just let's see what happens. Let's make it work.
Shit out this patch and see what happens. Oh, it corrupts game saves? Well.
Perfect. That's what we always wanted.
Pass certification.
I mean, far be it to not simulate the true WWE fan experience.
Crushing your hopes and dreams on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Corrupting you to the core.
Yeah. Oh, man. Last bit of news I have is that the Xbox Black Friday sale has started for gold members, with normal members getting access later on this weekend, I believe. I've already bought 7 games from the sale.
Oh, gravy, man. Good thing you held off on Pokemon, right?
Yeah. Well, I had a bunch of credit stored up on Xbox from rewards, but I got some good stuff. I think I got some winners here. I got Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite for $10.
Isn't that on Game Pass?
Yeah, but now I own it. I don't have to worry about leaving Game Pass.
I'm not really worried about it leaving Game Pass. I've played it.
I just started playing it a couple days ago because it was part of...
It's all right.
Okay. It was part of one of the Game Pass quests. Yeah, those are fun, too. I got Team Sonic Racing for $20. I was excited to play that one.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 2 for
$20. The new one. Yeah.
Shenmue 1 and 2 for $15. Yeah. There's some good stuff. There's some really good sales. You could get the Disney Afternoon Collection for $5.
Okay. I should actually probably look that up.
Yeah, you should.
I should do that.
It's good. Cole, did you get anything in the sale, or are you planning to?
I'm watching The Sims stuff, but I haven't got paid yet, so I haven't got anything yet. I clearly need more Sims DLC in my life. There's not enough.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's the news I have. Anything either you want to talk about?
Nothing that springs to mind, I don't think, but I'm going to talk slowly while I double check.
Are we not going to talk about the nominations for the Game Awards?
Oh, yeah, that's a great thing to bring up.
I didn't look at them.
It's basically all Death Stranding.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Oh, come on. Well, that did get the most nominations. That is true. But there was a lot of other games that got nominated for things as well. That just got the most.
I was mad about one thing in particular. Mm-hmm. The best family game category, all five were Nintendo.
Yeah, that's the Nintendo category.
That's garbage.
What else do you think would be there?
Because there are so many indie games and stuff that have come out that are good family games.
True. Overcooked.
Name.
Yeah.
Overcooked came out like years ago.
Overcooked 2.
Did that come out this year?
Pretty sure it was this year.
Type.
No, it was last year. It was last year.
Son of a bitch. Yep. Well, I'm wrong then. Fuck me.
You can't tell me that of all the games that we played, that there's literally nothing that was a family game. That wasn't.
I see where you're coming from. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I was glad that Yoshi's Crafted World was on there because I played a lot of that alongside my child, and we had a blast playing it.
Awesome Prime is playing the game of dropping biddies into the cup on stream because he just dropped 20 more. He's trying to fill that fucker up again. It was like crashing last week because of how many bits were in there between him and Grant dropping single bits all the time.
Dropping the bits, man.
Dropping bits.
Dropping bits.
Oh, I love Norg. So good. Well, should we go through all the nominations?
That's a lot to go through.
Sure. Well, we can at least go through some of the bigger ones.
Go through if you want to. We want to point out a few of the things that looked good, things that looked bad. You know.
Well, I'll just go down from the top. Game of the Year. Cole, I know you're excited that Control's part of that.
I'm so excited to play that.
I have mixed feelings on. Like, Control's a great story, but the release of it was a dumpster fire.
Well, it sounded like you played it on a non-X Xbox, from what I inferred a couple weeks ago, correct?
And if the game is going to be qualified for Game of the Year, shouldn't it play...
Well, I think they look at the best possible scenario for its performance.
That's a garbage idea, too. Like, if it comes out and it only plays on, like, one of the six platforms it's on, that's a problem. And don't get me wrong, like, I really liked the game.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I unpaused it, it would stutter for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And there were cutscenes. Couldn't even experience properly and didn't know I wasn't experiencing properly until I saw other people play it. And then I was like, the fuck, that's not what my cutscene looked like.
I still wonder if you just had a bad install or something because I haven't.
No, because I saw the exact same cutscenes on the Digital Foundry. Like their cutscenes for the S were the same as what I had.
Wow.
The lower end consoles had a lot of trouble with that game out of the gate. Like you needed a pretty high end PC or one of the, you know, one of the upgraded
consoles. Even the PS4 was struggling with it.
Yeah, even the PS4.
You know, so if you didn't have a high end PC or an X, you were fucked.
Yeah, but you kind of figure that like the people voting for the nominees are, you know, they have the most. They were playing the, you know, best case scenario hardware basically.
Everybody, so
they were
getting like, it's voted. Well, I mean, choosing for the nominees. I was going to say the actual choices, like, people vote on those.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens then, you know, if it
wins out in the end. It's going to run away with it all, but...
I don't think so.
Now, the other games for Game of the Year are Death Stranding, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Resident Evil 2 Remake, Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, and The Outer Worlds.
Smash Ultimate came out after the Game Awards last year, so therefore it's on this year's awards. Mm-hmm. And of course, fucking Jedi Fallen Order missed the nomination window for this year.
It was released on the cutoff day.
Oh, yeah. That sucks.
Yeah.
So, and apparently that means it's not eligible for next year as well. Really? It's just because of the exact day it came out on. Like, it's...
Oh, God.
I don't know. Maybe they'll do something. But it's fucking stupid. Like, you'd think that, you know, Jeff Keighley would look at this and Jesus would be like, hey, maybe we should change the date back one day to include, you know, I mean, that was Fallen Order and Pokemon, like two big games came out that day, like get another Nintendo nominee for the family category, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like I've heard that the fan reception to Death Stranding has been a lot more negative than the critical reception, which was pretty positive. So, I don't know. I think it's a tough call to what will win Game of the Year. I think the votes will be pretty split. Like, I don't think there's, like, a runaway, like, obviously this is what should take it this year.
Prime dropped another 30 bits.
Drop it, bitch!
So, thank you, Prime, for yet another 30. The cup is pretty much full. So, I don't know how much more full you want it to get, Prime. They're about
how
to spill
full do
out.
You got?
So who do you think wins Game of the Year?
Me?
You're going to win Game of the Year?
Me. I'm going to win. I could see... Oh, geez. I think it will be... You know... Everyone who's played Control seems to... Well, other than Cole. seems to really love it. I think it could be Outer Worlds. I think that has been really well received across the board and does some really cool stuff. I think that's a strong possibility.
I do think if it weren't for Death Stranding, Outer Worlds would run away with it.
All right.
But
I think you're giving Death Stranding too much credit.
I don't think it deserves the credit. That's the problem.
I think you should rescind that credit that you don't think it deserves.
I think that everybody... And look, Kojima makes... decent games. And now my head is on a platter. But but I think everybody gets so wrapped up in, oh, it's Hideo Kojima, and it's automatically amazing no matter what. And it's like, look, I like Kojima well enough. I like Guillermo del Toro. I love him. I love Norman Reedus. Pretty much we're on the path where I was like, I have no choice but to like this. But from the gameplay I've watched, from the reviews I've read, I don't think it deserves all the praise that it gets.
I guess you can't know for sure without playing it.
Prime said it should have been called UPS Dark Souls.
I seriously have made a lot of delivery simulator jokes about it. Like, everybody shits on me for my simulator games, and then they love Death Stranding. And I'm
like
yeah, fuck everybody.
Simulator.
It's not even
a
walking simulator.
I still haven't played it.
I haven't played it yet. You know, we'll see. I might wait all the way to the PC release next year. Not sure, but we'll see.
I'm not
Maybe
shocked
I'll
that
be
it
able
got
to
a
play
lot
it
in-
on Google Stadia.
Yeah, I mean, like, I heard that it was, like, a 50-hour game, and I was like, I don't want to get involved in that right now. I want to get through Outer Worlds.
And, oh, I heard, like, 115 hours.
Well, it's a lot of hours. Let's leave it at that. It is many, many hours. So I was just like, no, I want to get through Outer Worlds. I do want to play Control before, you know, it's, yeah, before the end of the year. So
mail these packages.
So maybe after those things are out of my way, I'll get Death Stranding, or I'll just be onto something else, and I'll just wait until the PC version hits next year. And but
yeah. I would love to see the Outer Worlds win Game of Year. I think that'd be really cool.
I think it has a strong argument. That game's been a lot of fun playing it.
I'm still early in it, but I'm having a blast with it. The game is gorgeous. It plays really well. I'm really loving the Outer Worlds, and I hope it gets some recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of like running down some of the other nominees.
Anything catch your eyes?
Well, I was happy to see Sayonara Wild Hearts in a couple of categories. I feel like it should have been in... I think there's two categories for indie game. There's like a fresh indie game and then a different indie game one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised Outer Wilds didn't get nominated for Game of the Year, by the way, because it seems like a lot of people love that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is independent game and fresh indie game.
So, for the fresh indie game...
Yeah.
If you don't vote Slay the Spire for that, then don't ever talk to me again.
Man, I gotta play that game.
It's so good.
I know. I downloaded it on Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
Haven't got to play it yet.
Good old Game Pass.
Yeah, Tetris 99 is on there under multiplayer game, though I doubt it'll win. I think that's cool.
I'm excited to see Cadence of Hyrule on there for best music.
Yeah, that's. I always do look at the best music category, and I don't think Sayonara Wild Hearts was on there, which is a bummer.
It is.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Best score music.
River City Girls wasn't on there, which should be.
Yeah, the nominees for best score or music are Cadence of Hyrule, Death Stranding, of course, because Jeff Keighley has a hard on for Kojima. Devil May Cry 5, Kingdom Hearts 3, and Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Okay.
I voted for Devil May Cry 5.
I think I voted for Sayonara Wild Hearts. I know I voted for that because it's my...
Don't get me wrong. Sayonara Wild Hearts is a great soundtrack. Have you heard Devil May Cry?
No, I'm not. I have not. I've heard some of it. I have not completed that game yet.
Then again, I have a lady hard-on for Devil May Cry.
No, I just feel like music is one of those categories that I usually look at and... pretty closely on these awards just to see what they're, you know, at least nominating. But I always feel like, you know, games like Death Stranding, which just kind of ends up having kind of a, I don't know, it's just a big game, right? And it has a quote unquote moving score to it, but there are just so many smaller games that have way better soundtracks than just kind of generic, you know, overproduced whatever.
I'm hoping Cadence of Hyrule wins that one. Yeah. Fucking Danny B. That would be incredible to see Danny B win at the Game Awards.
I've not heard a note of the Death Stranding soundtrack, so I might be way off base. Mm-hmm. It might be great, but you know, there's plenty of games I see nominated for score and music just because they're the big games, and a lot of smaller indie games that deserve recognition just don't get any.
I think a runaway win is going to be a best VR AR game going to Beat Saber. I don't know how that one can lose.
Yeah.
Although I like seeing Trover Saves the Universe on there, which, by the way, just got a release date for Switch and Xbox One. Trover Saves the Universe is going to be hitting some more
platforms.
Did it
get off for Xbox?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think December 3rd it was.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know I had saw Switch, but I didn't think it had
that
got
one. That is a profane game. There is a lot of cursing in Trover Saves the Universe. If you like Rick and Morty, Justin Roiland, it is like unfiltered Justin Roiland, where he just, I swear to God, he probably just went into an audio booth and recorded for hours.
Wow.
And they used all of it.
I just want to point out that I just won a game of Hearthstone Battlegrounds when I was totally halfway paying attention to it. That's how good I am at that mode right now.
Proud of you.
The other news bit I was about to mention is they announced a new version of Street Fighter V.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Street Fighter V Championship Edition, which they're adding Gil to the game from Street Fighter III. But the cool thing is that it's not just that when you buy Championship Edition, you get, you know, you get all the characters, obviously, but you also get, like, all the costumes and stages that had previously required you to get very deep into microtransactions in order to buy. And I want that stuff. I want it. So it's actually, like, a hell of a value for $30 to get the complete Street Fighter V package. Well, that's if you're just buying the game straight. I think the upgrade is like 25.
I just wish they would release the goddamn game on other platforms, but Sony are
It's on PC. I mean, Sony paid for it, so what are you going to do?
Be mad.
Okay, well, you just sit there and be mad, but there's a good reason why. That's why you don't see Bayonetta 2 on anything else.
Nintendo paid That's also it. Rude.
Yeah. Hey, Nintendo's slapping down the money for it. Tell Daddy Gates to use some of his richest man on the planet money to buy Bayonetta and bring it over to Xbox.
Doesn't Bill Gates have, like, nothing to do with Microsoft anymore?
I wouldn't say nothing.
I don't know. any other nominees or news that you want to talk about? No. Or should we move on to reviews, Cole?
I'm good.
You're good. Tim, I guess we'll let you get going.
I will bid you adieu, friends.
Thank you, as always, for being on here. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
I don't. I'm just going to go.
All right. Have a good one, Tim.
Yep. Later.
All right. You ready for reviews?
Yeah.
Ready to do this?
Yeah.
We don't have that many to talk about, which is nice.
We're speedrunning tonight, and I have absolutely no reason to be in a hurry. And now I'm just like, well, shit, what am I going to do with the rest of my night?
Well, I mean, it's not a complete speedrun. We just spent an hour doing fucking Rasslecast.
That's you guys, though. And I'm allergic to the Rassles.
Hey, you were invited.
I was, but I had kids that weren't in bed yet.
Kids that have responsibilities, and I'm a parent, and I have to be responsible and...
Whatever. I mean, I could be a garbage parent like 94% of the other ones around here.
Yeah, really.
And just be like, go to bed, bye. But instead, I like to like, I don't know, we read shit before they go to bed. We're working through Alice in Wonderland right now. Yeah.
You know what else you're working through?
Reviews?
Yeah. Segway. As well awesome done. Prime drops yet another 20 biddies. He dropped 100 before I played the sound clip. I didn't get to shout him out, but oh my God, they're dropping so slow again.
Drop it, bits!
And they're all off to the side again. So many of them are missing.
Wow.
I'm going to get a Twitch payout just from Prime trying to fill the fucking cup.
We need a bigger cup.
I might have to find another cup that he just says, God damn it, dropping frames. Oh, man. All right. We got reviews to talk about. First game to talk about tonight is called Need for Speed Heat, developed by Ghost Games, published by EA, released November 8th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Hustle by day and risk it all at night in Need for Speed Heat, a thrilling race experience that pits you against the city's rogue police force as you battle your way into street racing elite. Cole, tell us about Need for Speed Heat.
The first question is, who'd you blow to get this for us? We don't ever get shit like this.
I'm excited that we got to cover this.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I picked it up myself. I had issues with it at the beginning of the game. Like, I'll say now, the first hour of this game is going to be a struggle for some people. But once you get past that initial hump, it's really good.
Yeah. So I'm one of those rare people who have, like, clung and held on to Need for Speed despite the fact that they were clearly flailing in the racing department. The last couple Need for Speed games weren't good.
No.
That FMV one was harsh. And yet I still spent quite a bit of time with it and I enjoyed it anyway. It was like a guilty pleasure I played. So when you said, you know, Need for Speed Heat, I'm like, give please. Because I was hoping that this game was going to revive everybody's faith in Need for Speed. I think they've done it. I think they've fucking done it. And I'm so proud of Ghost Games. I sat and I played this game, I bet 6 hours the first day it came in. And then I didn't even realize I had done it.
Wow.
I was so involved in enjoying it that I didn't realize time was passing quite. Like, I looked at the clock and I was like, oh shit, my kids will be home soon. Because I had spent the whole day playing Need for Speed. And I'm not upset about it at all. So if you're familiar with Need for Speed, Most Wanted, or was it Carbon was the other one, where you had cops on your ass all the time. You kind of got the basic premise for Need for Speed Heat. There's a race league in town. You're in Palm City, and you're trying to climb up. First, you got to get your foot in the door with the league, and then you got to climb up its ranks and just prove yourself as a racer. But unlike, say, Forza, where you go out, you race, and that's that, Need for Speed likes to throw in the element of the cops trying to chase your happy ass down while you're doing it.
Yeah.
I was incredibly impressed with the cutscenes for Need for Speed Heat, except for one character model looks really odd. There's something about Anna that I can't put my finger on, but it's like her mouth or her teeth or just something. I don't know why, but she just looks a little off. And yet everybody else looks so good. And I think that might be why her character model stands out as being a little awkward to me, because all the others do look so good. I was also really surprised to see the game. Most people don't play Need for Speed for story. Even like Most Wanted and stuff, I don't care why the cops are trying to chase me down. It's kind of obvious. You're breaking the law. But Need for Speed Heat, they tried to like sneak in a full-fledged story about police corruption in there, and even a little bit about police brutality, because in the beginning the cops are gonna like straight up kill the dude for racing, and yeah, they go
that
to
was
like
a really like I was tense so beginning of the game shocked.
Like they go to wipe the dash cam and everything. I'm just like, excuse me.
Like this is pretty intense.
But I thought it was really cool that they touched on that. You know, it was not something you expect from Need for Speed, and it pulled me in. It made me a little more invested into the characters. I'm like, you know, I don't want any of them to permanently sleep with fishes, so let's maybe not get busted. I was a little initially put off. You can choose your character, and they're literally in a lineup. Not a police lineup, but a lineup with spotlight. You choose your character. And this will lead me to one of my few complaints about the game, though. Like, you pick one, and I was like, okay, well, you're stuck with whoever you got. But there is a customization option if you can find it. And that leads me to my gripe, is that the game does not do a very good job of telling you where to go to find different elements for customization. Like, I was way up into the 20s for my rep before I realized that I could change my license plate. Even though I knew from past Need for Speed that was a thing you could do, I just didn't see it. Like, everything is so tucked in the menus, and it's neat and it's organized well, but there's also nothing that goes, hey, by the way, go this way to change that. So, like, I had no idea I could change my character's hair once I picked the one I had. Or I might have picked a different one if I had known. And I was like, I didn't know I could change your clothes or change, you know, I think you can change like even her makeup and stuff. And I was like, well, that would have made a difference if I'd known that in the beginning. But it doesn't say, hey, pick a character, you can customize it later. It's just something you fall into on accident. And yeah. Then you spend 2 hours customizing your character because you didn't know you could. Well, now we know how I spend 6 hours playing the first day. but that falls in line too, not just with, you know, character customization, but your car. And that means that there's not a lot of explanation on how to specifically tune your car. It's a very trial and error basis initially. Like you mentioned in the beginning, it was really difficult. And that's because it doesn't line up. Even when you're on easy difficulty, it doesn't like lay it out for you like, hey, it looks like you're having trouble steering. You can turn this off. Like there were menu things where D was like, oh, you can change that. Traction was one of them. Like I was trying to drift and I'm like, the fuck, this is a nightmare. And then all of a sudden I realized I could turn the auto traction off.
Yeah.
And I was drifting everywhere. But it never once tells you, hey, push over on the D-pad and you can turn your traction off. And it could benefit greatly from just a little more talking to me like I'm a dumbass.
Yeah. good way to put it.
You know, I will say, if you boil it down to the arcade racing games and you had to pick one that was a little more easy on the tuning side for non-car enthusiasts to play, Need for Speed is going to trash Forza every time. Forza does have the element of where, like, you can at least download tunes that other people have done and get a generic, yes, this is going to improve you, or no, it's not, kind of readout. But Need for Speed lets you feel like you know what you're doing in that regard by letting you go in and it says, yes, this particular part will race things up or down. This is going to improve you or cause a problem. And it doesn't make you go in and sit and like specifically tune the differentials, which is something Forza does that makes me want to put my head through a wall. Whereas on Need for Speed, it's like, okay, well, do I want drifting differentials or do I want, you know, off-road or do I want race ready? And then it just kind of more generalizes it for you and lets you just pick apart and go. So I could like, I know I hate drifting and I wanted a car that was not set to drift. I wanted it to stick to that track like fucking glue.
weren't you just bitching that you weren't able to drift?
Yeah, but I needed to drift because it was a drift challenge. That was my problem. That was the other thing. Like, I've avoided all the drift challenges and shit just because I really fucking hate them. So the story mode is like, it takes a very Forza approach. If you've played Forza Horizon 3, like, you're halfway to understanding how Need for Speed plays. I was very surprised by this. Like, they went full on, we're unashamed of what we've, you know, chosen from other games here. It's the phrase steal like an artist, I guess. Because they've pulled in those long jumps and they've pulled in the drifting challenges and the street cameras that capture your speeds. It's like, I've seen these elsewhere before.
Yeah. And the billboards you can smash through are straight out of Burnout.
And you have to, like, straight up, like, think about how you're going to create a car that's going to be capable of doing that shit. And again, though, that is one instance. Like, I was full-fledged dummy mode because there's several different collectibles. And most of them you either drive up to and smash, like the pink flamingos, or you drive up to and press RB to collect, like the spray paint. But the billboards, I kept thinking that I just went up to them and collected them. And at no point does it say, hey, bust it. And again, it could just
I
really
thought
talk
that was like, kind of self-explanatory that you see a billboard of the fucking cops pointing at you. And you're like, I'm going to smash that son of a bitch.
But what if like they got out of the car and there was a little cutscene of them spray painting over it or something, you know? Because there were other spray paint collectibles. And so I was like, maybe there's something else that happens or that I'm missing. And it wasn't until I had hit a jump somewhere else and I was like, oh, fuck, I better have to go jump through that shit.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you had to do. And so again, I was like, I drove around forever. Like, why the fuck am I not figuring out how to collect these? They're popping up everywhere. Talk to me like I'm dumb over here, ghost, please. Because I do have days like that.
I'm so proud of you.
That, I know. And sometimes it's the case of the overthinks, you know? And I tend to really overthink things like that. But my fuckery aside, I am so glad to see Need for Speed return to form like that. The addition of the day and night modes, so good. That's another instance where they could like talk to you like you're dumb, because I figured it out really quickly that if it was daytime and I went to the map and I pressed down on the stick, it would turn me to nighttime, right? Without me having to go back to a safe house or anything. D didn't. Like, I watched him play for 2 or 3 hours, and I was like, why do you keep going to the safe house so goddamn much? And he's like, well, that's how you gotta change it tonight, duh, what are you doing? And I'm like, pressing on the stick. And so then he was like, well, shit. Because it's really something that you can do dynamically. You know, it's something that you can do dynamically. I
didn't know that either.
God damn it, Joel.
In my defense, the Xbox in my office where I play most of my games has been really bitchy since the latest Xbox update that kind of fucked up Rock Band, and Need for Speed would not load for me no matter what. I just factory reset the system today and the game loaded up for me, so I'm going to get back to playing it. But for the longest time, I was unable to actually play the damn game because of the latest Xbox update ruining Rock Band.
And imagine now that you go back to it, you're going to save yourself so much loading time.
I am. I seriously did not know that you could just click the stick and switch from day to night. Son of a hand-holding Ghost Games. We need a little more hand-holding in this game.
Now you just agree with me.
Explain some of the dumb shit to us. Hey, at least I knew that you had to fly through the fucking billboards.
Well, there were ladders beside of them.
Yeah, it's realistic. That's for people to climb up and change the.
That's to go up there and spray paint dicks on the cops' faces.
Speaking of dicks, this is a profane game.
Yeah.
The T rating is getting pretty risque with how much they say shit in this game.
They're pretty mouthy.
Yeah.
I let number 3 play Forza, but I'm not gonna let her play Need for Speed. I mean, the whole opener with them, like, the police brutality bit aside, the story itself, the characters are a little on the mouthy side. I say fuck a lot, so I don't care.
Yeah.
That's fine for me. But if you've got a younger audience, a little more.
Prime drop 10 more bits. Oh, they are falling so slow. And they're all missing the cup.
I'm so mesmerized. I don't know what you did to make them all miss the cup.
I don't know why they're missing the cup either. I don't get it. But I'm sad that when I close OBS and I open it up again, most of those bits probably won't be there. And I don't know why. Yeah.
They time out after so long.
No, I don't get it. Yeah, maybe one got in. Them. But yeah, Need for Speed. I am really impressed. Like I said, when I first started playing it, the handling at the beginning of the game was not that good. It wasn't until I finally upgraded my car to a new one. It was actually the pre-order car I got.
I used my original car all the way up until like level 25 or so.
Wow. Yeah. I couldn't stick with it. Just the handling, like any basic turn, you would spin out completely. And it was really hard to get used to the turning and the handling in the early vehicles. And it wasn't until, like I said, I got a pre-order car because I pre-ordered the game and loaded it up, and it was much better. And it was like a whole new world opened up to me. Once you got past that initial hump, like, I was ready to write this game off. I paid money for it. I bought the Best Buy limited collector edition that comes with the model of the car and fucking steel book and all this other stuff. I have 4 magnets on my fridge that came with it. So, like, I invested in this game, and I walked away after my first hour questioning whether or not I made a mistake. But I'm really enjoying my time with it after that initial hump that I got over. And it's a big map. There's a lot to do, lots of challenges. It is just a really, really solid game. And I'm glad that I stuck with it.
Yeah, I didn't have my hump was more like 2 races. And then after I did that, and even still, I was coming in like 2nd and 3rd, and I just couldn't catch the first place.
Yeah.
And then I was like, after that, I got my bearings about me and was doing fine. Now, the funny part is like, the best part where it was, D was playing, and I looked, and he's like level 19 or 20 at one point, and I was only at like level 8 or 9, and his car's rating was like a 225 and mine was 262. And I was like, get fucked.
Beautiful.
He's all big into cars and he's like fine tuning everything specifically. And he's like got a garage with like 5 cars in it. I'm still using my original Nissan that the car gives you out of, or the game gives you out of pity. And it's like, I've got it jacked up to the hills and it's incredible. I run a race and it's like, your recommended race is 180. And I'm like, yeah, I'm rolling through it and I'm lapping them 2 or 3 times.
And I love that they have waypoints that you got to go through, yeah. But you don't have to follow the course. So
as long as you hit those checkpoints, you can cut anywhere.
Yeah, so you can right cut through shit. Parking lots. You can plow through fences and just like, hey, I'm not going all the way down there and around the turn. The checkpoint's right next to me. I'm just swinging right through. Make my own shortcut.
Yeah.
But yeah, $60 on Need for Speed Heat. What are you thinking?
I give it a buy it. I'm straight up even trying to convince Studa to get it because we played. He was my fellow Need for Speeder, and we played a lot of Need for Speed. The last couple, I even convinced him to get the one with the FMV.
Wow.
And that was the point where he was like, yeah, we're not Need for Speeding it anymore. And now I'm like back on that wagon of I've got to convince him to play Need for Speed with me because it's that good again.
Oh, I think it's either Walmart or Target. Somewhere has it for $35 on Black Friday.
Yeah, and I got to convince him.
So convince him to wait in line and pick it up.
He works at Walmart. So.
Oh, well, then even better. next game to talk about is called Narcos Rise of the Cartels, developed by Gaumont, published by Curve Digital, released November 19th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $29.99. Welcome to Colombia 1980s. The fire of El Patron's empire have been lit and its influence spanning borders and expansion unabated. Influence and corruption is rife. Cops, guards, politicians, and those in between are falling into the pocket of the cartel. And after years of production, America is finally taking notice. Certainly not covered this one, wrote in a review, and this is what she's got to say. Hey there, Joe, Cam, and Cole. The reason I didn't include you last week's review is because you were the walking plague and I didn't know if you would be there. So there you go. It's certainly not. This week I'm reviewing Narcos Rise of the Cartels for the Xbox One. Narcos Rise of the Cartels is a turn-based action strategy game that's based off the Netflix series Narcos. Considering that I haven't seen the show yet, please don't crucify me. I'm going into the game with no real knowledge of the show and its goings-on, which I prefer. In the game, he plays the Fed, specifically a DEA agent by the name of Murphy, who wants to disrupt the cocaine from flowing into the U.S. and capture El Patron, the ringleader of the Medellin cartel. I probably said that wrong. Medellin?
I'm not sure.
I haven't seen the show, so I don't know. You can also unlock the Narcos campaign once you finish the first major DEA mission, which is cool as well. There's not much difference between their missions, but I like the fact that you could see the turn of events from a different perspective. You've got some help, but these aren't the people that you're working with in battle, not yet anyway. You're working with various other units that you can recruit once you finish the tutorial battle. Your units range from regular police, spec ops, demolition, search block, and even other DEA agents. I hate saying DEA agents because I just stutter. DEA. Each of these units have different skills, weaponry, and movement areas, so go ahead and experiment and decide which ones you like the best. Once you get your units leveled up, you can unlock different perks for them, which is awesome, but getting there is tricky. The mechanics are interesting. It's a turn-based, but you can only take any action with one unit each turn. Each unit has a move and action that they could take during your turn. As you level, you get more moves and actions. There's also a counterattack mechanic, so if a baddie moves in your line of sight, you can counteract, which is where you have a specific amount of time to shoot the careless baddie. Counteracts are earned during turns where you take no actions that cause damage, so that's cool. The baddies can also earn counteracts, so be careful there. There's also the kill shot mechanic, which is essentially you get another chance to shoot the baddie to kill him if the baddie was wounded heavily by your first attack. Finally, you can use cover in this game, like cars, trash, and buildings that increase your chances of getting hit, but baddies can take advantage of... I would imagine that decreases your chances of getting hit if you take cover.
I would think.
Maybe typo, I would assume. But baddies can take advantage of that as well, so know and understand your surroundings. However, the gameplay is brutal. You can get through the tutorial mission the first mission with ease, but after that, expect your units to die regularly and they stay dead. You can replenish your units, but it costs money. Up to the first big story mission, you can accept your missions for free. After that, you have to pay to play. This is dangerous because I don't recommend you going into a mission with less than 4 units. If your units are constantly dying and you're replacing them, money becomes a serious issue. Since your units are always dying, it's hard to level them. You can buy them leveled, but they're more expensive. You also cannot take injured units into a mission. They have to be healed first, and that costs money. Money management is a huge concern. Also, the way your units die is ridiculous. The baddies have an extreme damage advantage over you. You have percentages at which you can hit, which is fine, but it doesn't seem like the baddies have that same restriction. For example, let's say you're taking on a regular baddie armed with the same pistol that you have at the same distance. You have an 80% chance to hit the baddie for 1 to 3 points of damage. You miss one of your shots, hitting for 2 points of damage. Fine, but the baddie hits you for 3. You and the baddie only have 5 health. Assuming that everything will stay the same, the baddie will kill you before you can kill him. Your options are limited. You can rest, which sacrifices the move portion of your turn to heal 1 health. You can also use the first aid skill if you have it to heal for 3, but it sacrifices your action. You can also move, but if you're in sight of one of the baddies and he has a counteract, he can fire at you and potentially kill you. Finally, you could stand your ground and hope that you kill him before he kills you. Not the optimal situation, and it's frustrating. Another thing that annoyed me is you earn achievements in this game, but Xbox says the achievements aren't supported for this game. That is because you played pre-release. That's not an issue. That's just how shit works pre-release.
Yeah.
That's nothing strange at all. The achievements are there. Don't worry. Achievements are fine.
Yep.
Weird, but I was able to get the achievement list from Steam, which again, it's there. It's just pre-release. Another annoyance is that the tutorial doesn't tell you that you can switch weapons by pressing Y and that reloading your weapon counts as an action, which is a horrible oversight that should be corrected. Narcos Rise of the Cartels is available for $29.99, and should you purchase it? Honestly, the price point is too high for me, but if you're a fan of the show or looking for a new turn-based action game, I would try it. I can't see this game working well for many other people, though. That's a bummer to hear. I was looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Next game to talk about is called Woven, developed by Alter Ego Games, published by Sticky Lock Studios. Oh, shit. No Time for Games dropping 300 biddies.
Drop bits!
Oh, it's going down right down the middle. It's going to go down the middle. Let's
see. Dropping bits! Ah! All over your fucking face!
Wow.
I thought it was going to like land in there and just make things go flying.
Nope.
Damn. Oh, well. Thank you for the 300 biddies. Yeah, it landed in the cup, which is awesome. Thank you for the 300 biddies. That was awesome. We need some wet pancakes.
Wet pancakes!
Wet pancakes indeed, George. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Woven, developed by Alter Ego Games, published by Sticky Lock Studios, released November 15th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. Explore a woolen world where stuffed animals once lived in peace, search for hidden secrets, and customize your character with different animal shapes to solve puzzles, an epic adventure with two very unlikely heroes, and a story narrated in rhyme. Cole, tell us about Woven as Awesome Prime drops yet another 18 biddies to try and break my computer.
Wet pancakes!
So Woven is an adventure game where you play as a little stuffed animal. Originally, you start off as an elephant. His or her name, gender is non-important, it's a stuffed animal, is Stuffy. Apparently they were running short in the creativity well for that department. Stuffy comes across a little firefly type creature that is a robot named Glitch. So Stuffy and Glitch are on a mission to figure out who they were, what they were, what's happened to their world. There's a whole lot of ambiguity going on in this game. Nothing is really set in stone, and it's all about, discovering the narrative as you play. Unfortunately, that's kind of the downside of the game as well, because it doesn't give you a lot of, we need games to talk to us like we're idiots sometimes. And while it does encourage you to just explore, it never really lays out what your quests or goals are. It's just like, well, here's the world, good luck. In each level, you can find different fabric patterns. You can find different animal knits so that you can change Stuffy's appearance, which does come along with adding different abilities to Stuffy. You'll start off just being able to stomp the foot, and then as you find more patterns, you can add in the ability to kind of like push things over. The animation for stomping the foot is far better than the one for like punching/pushing things. It's not an actual combat mechanic. There isn't any combat. It's just explore and you know, interact with the world. So like, it's weird that the stuffed animal does like this punch look, but doesn't actually hit. It's usually used to like knock over a tree or move a block. It doesn't actually hit it, but it kind of acts like it does, and it acts like there's so much effort involved as far as the animation goes. And then like, you'll just see something move a little bit. And it's kind of frustrating because it just doesn't quite line up. The amount of exertion and the amount of force. Yeah, they're a little separated. That said, I want to point out how incredibly adorable this game is. The entire world looks like it has been knitted and stitched together from different fabrics. So like when there are hills and mountains, they look like they're strips of leather that have been stitched together. Fields are these big, just like, cable knitted areas. Water just looked like water, unfortunately. I was like trying to think of like some kind of material they could have used for it, like maybe beads or whatever, but no, it's just water and you can't get in the water. So, which I guess makes sense because wool would shrink. Excuse me, I'm still a little bit sick.
You would get soaked up and you would sink.
Basically, yeah. A lot of bad things could happen to wool and water.
Yeah. The game is gorgeous, though. Like, I've had my eye on this one just based on the visuals alone.
I was really surprised because when I play these games, I will usually, like, go looking for information about the development process and stuff to it. Because if I'm reviewing a game and it's got some quirks and only, like, three people worked on it, I can be a little more forgiving than if a crew of, like, 300 worked on it. Somebody should have caught that shit. So I was looking up the information for Woven, and I saw some like original gameplay from, I think it was 2015, and it was so drastically different from the game I played. There was so many elements to it that were the same, like the worlds were still, you know, woven and stitched together and had that very craft quality to it, but it was, the narration was done by a woman, and then in the game I played, the narration was by a man. But the narration is all told in like this sing-songy, rhymey storytelling. In the previous iteration of the game, it seemed to focus very heavily on glitch. Even though you primarily control Stuffy, glitch seemed to be the main focus. Whereas in this current version that I played, it seemed a little more 50-50. To the point that how you even control glitch versus Stuffy literally splits the controller in half. So glitch's options, you will hold, I can't remember if it's, yeah, left trigger. You hold left trigger and then you move the left thumbstick around to choose whether, you know, you turn on the light so that they light up a cave, or whether they'll go into these machines that you'll see around the world. Likewise for Stuffy, you'll hold the right trigger and then use the right thumbstick to choose from the menu of their interactions. Throughout the world, you will find like knitting machines, and usually you can look around and wherever there is one, you'll see gray smoke floating around in the sky. So that kind of like helps you navigate a little more, but there isn't any kind of map. So you, again, you're just left to go out and wonder and hope you find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But at least the knitting machines, they're fairly frequently found enough that if you need to change something up so that you have a different ability or whatever, you don't have to backtrack too much for it. That said, sometimes the game doesn't necessarily register the changes you've made. In earlier levels, there was one point where I was trying to add on the ability to punch to Stuffy, and even though I chose it 3 or 4 times, I would get out of the machine and not have that ability still. And then it finally just kind of clicked one time, and I got out of the machine and had it. And I was like, I don't know what I did different. That was a problem that occurred again. There was a puzzle where a character wants you to make yourself look like you're high fashion. So you need to go and find this fabric pattern and then equip it to Stuffy. Well, you had to equip it in all of Stuffy's spots so that it was on all of the patches, all of the secondary, on every arm, leg. You had to take your time to make sure it was everywhere. Even though I would have it everywhere, I would go to the boss and he'd be like, nope, you don't have it in enough places.
Okay.
And then I have to backtrack. Go back to the machine, click to put it on, even though it was already there. I clicked to put it on again. I did it 17 times before it registered.
Wow.
That yes, I did in fact have to have fabric on.
Jeez.
I don't know why it has these kind of quirks. It's just like most of the things in the game work properly when you're exploring, when you're choosing how to interact with things, fine. But that fabric machine is a crapshoot. Yeah, it may or it may not do what you tell it to do. It may look like it did what you told it to do, and then you're going to go try to use that ability or put that fabric to the test and find out damn good and well that it did not care what you did in that fabric machine.
Well, weird. Go ahead.
That's kind of disappointing because the game as a whole, like, you could just kind of get lost in it and spend your time enjoying it. The puzzles are a little obtuse, and sometimes the solution isn't obvious, but if you explore enough, it'll click. But it's a downfall when you think it's clicked and you have the correct solution and the game is still telling you it's not.
No. Well, weirdness aside, $20 on Woven, what do you think?
I'm going to give it a solid try it. I think it needs smoothed out. There's definitely some quirks that need a little work. But gameplay wise, I think it's a good foundation. It's just not at its full potential for a $20 game. No. There's plenty of content there. There's so many worlds and they're all so pretty, but it's just not. Like, it could use a little more guidance and a little more polish, and those fucking knitting machines could work. That'd be good.
Iron out the kinks.
Yeah, and just a little more, and I'd be more inclined to give it a full-on buy it, but it just needs a little something.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Song of Horror, developed by Protocol Games, published by Razer Games. Episode 2 released October 31st on Steam for $7.99. Episode 1 is available for $7.99 as well, and the Season Pass is available for $21.99. Song of Horrors is a survival horror adventure. Face the manifestations of the present, an unpredictable eldritch AI that reacts to your way of playing. You won't experience two exact gameplays. Dark Mika covered this one, and she's not here this week. Yeah, she wrote in her review. Apparently she's visiting and she couldn't join us, but she wrote in a review, and it's just like old times where I'm going to have to struggle with her writing.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, she says, Song of Horror is an episodic puzzle game. This is a review of the first episode. At first, you play as Daniel, a man sober for 3 years and putting his life back together. He works for a publisher, and he's sent out to collect a manuscript from one of the publisher's more famous writers because it was due days ago and they hadn't heard a peep from the writer. Daniel arrives at the house and searches, finding nothing but a weird, scary door, and because he's a moron like all horror people, he enters and gets trapped. Now the game starts proper. You get to play as one of four characters, Daniel's boss, Daniel's ex-wife, a man who works for the writer as a housekeeper, and some random cute electrician woman. Bet you can't guess who I play it as. I'm gonna guess the electrician woman. What's your guess?
Yeah.
In the game, you're trying to protect yourself from the evil presence that wants to get you. Sometimes it'll try to burst through doors and you have to force it shut with a minigame. Sometimes the whole area starts to go evil and you have to hide, and then you have to go through a minigame to be still my beating heart. Every character has different stats from each other. One is fast and they can run, which increases how often the evil finds you thanks to being loud. When it finds you, you have to play one of the previously mentioned minigames. Strength helps you with the door minigame. Stealth, which tells you how often you'll be found by the evil if you aren't running. Lastly, your ability to keep a level head, which helps you with the hiding minigame. If your character gets taken by the darkness, they're gone. You could pick one of the other characters to try and finish the level with until you run out of people, then you're back at the very start of the game. If your character gets taken by the darkness, later episodes of the game, they'll be permanently gone. Most of the game is kind of like an escape room type puzzle game. You find items to solve problems that you can, so you can get the electricity to work, or doors to open, or finding keys in the first place, things of that nature. The episode is based around and in the writer's house. This seems to change in each episode, but it's an old style house, so it's honestly all sorts of creepy as fuck. It has atmosphere thanks to that. The horror aspects is honestly just the panic that hits you when you have to do one of the mini games. They are gloriously stressful as fuck. Each character is bad at one or both types of mini games, and the ones that have high stats to help with the mini games are also a lot louder and slower, so you're going to get found a lot more often and have to do the mini game significantly more often. No matter what, it's still fucking stressful, and I love it. Each character even talks about stuff differently. They all have different thoughts and opinions on what they see in the house, which is awesome. So it's worth playing through as each character just to see how they think, even disregarding there's an achievement for beating it with each character. Thanks to their different stats, they'll all play slightly differently, even if everything in the game is done the same way as well. Graphically, the game is fairly good, but nothing amazing, but even my garbage PC can play it, so it's not super well, but plays nonetheless. For $8, it's totally worth it for the first game. I'm hoping to review the second as well, which is out right now, and the third episode, which will be out soon, as I believe Steam has the achievements for it already. The game seems like it might have 4 or 5 episodes in total because the season pass is 22 and every episode is $8. I'd wager that's 4 episodes total.
Yeah.
So 7 for the first, or 8 for the first, and then 3 more would be 24. So 22, you save $2.
Yeah.
Yeah. I spent about 6 hours in the first game simply to beat it the first time. So you're looking at plenty of game time if you want to beat it with each character. So that sounds pretty good. Hopefully we could get the second episode and, she can continue on with her journey.
Yeah.
All right. Final game to talk about tonight. Can you believe there's only 5?
No, I cannot.
Well, there are.
I spent all week convinced I had forgot a game.
Well, you didn't.
Or like 8 games.
Yeah. Thank God the holiday rush is over, I guess. Final game to talk about tonight is called Scarlet Mysteries Cursed Child, developed by Worldloom, published by Artifex Mundi, released November 15th on Xbox One for $14.99. From an early age, Scarlet Everett displayed a gift for the paranormal as ghosts and spirits accompanied her every step. Desperate to protect her from an encroaching darkness, her father, Jonathan, placed her in an orphanage run by nuns. Years later, Scarlet returns to find her dad and finds a clue that leads her to the Victorian mansion of a baronet named Steemeyer. Cole, tell us about Scarlet Mysteries.
So I'm going to drop a little bit of a spoiler alert for the end of the review.
Okay.
This is my new favorite Artifex Mundi.
Oh.
Like, I'm pretty bossy over which ones of the stories that I like. And I think as far as narrative goes, this is one of the best ones they've released. So shout out Worldloom for that. They did a good one. Previously, I would have said that Dark Carnival was my favorite, but this one takes it. I think that it's such a narrative twist for them to to have a story where you play as a psychic. So they didn't have to, like, try to fit in all these mythical reasons for things being what they were. In a lot of Artifacts Monday games, they rely very heavily on Norse mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it was just, no, there's ghosts. Deal with it. You're a medium. There's a ghost. And it was kind of nice to not feel like everything was being shoehorned into so that it lined up with mythology.
Yeah.
It was just like, nope, deal with it. Here you are. I was also relieved that we have come back to our roots. We have a female protagonist.
Hooray.
The last one threw me for a loop and I was not a fan. So I was glad to see us take that turn back. As always, stunning games. These are absolutely beautiful. I would say this is probably even one of the prettier ones, despite the fact that it is kind of dark and gloomy. Normally I'm like, oh, the ones with unicorns are the pretty ones. Because, you know, I can't help myself. It's 2X chromosomes. It's just what I do.
No,
but it just appeals to my girly nature. But this one, despite being dark and gloomy and a little bit of horror tinged, even had a couple little jump scares.
Really?
Yeah, not enough to trigger fear pee, but like if you weren't expecting them, you'd be like, and it was, you don't expect that with Artifacts Monday. I take that back. What was the one? Nightmares from the Deep. That had a couple of jump scares too. But, it would catch you a little off guard because they have not had jump scares lately. The story is pretty simple. You know, you're a medium. There's a ghost situation. You're trying to help you've been brought in to help the ghost cross over while also trying to retrace your father's steps. And, I gotta stop there. I'm gonna give away spoilers. I almost did it. Next line, it was about to fall out.
Proud of you.
Yeah, nailed it. Playstyle is classic Artifacts Monday point and click. But yeah, normally with horror-ish games or even games that are trying to be scary, they rely very heavily on things being like dark and secretive and they play on the unknown. But given that this is a point and click game, they can't rely on that for their scenery. Things still have to look good. And that's what makes this one so impressive. Wouldn't be an Artifacts Monday game if we didn't talk about it being an easy completion. I would have to say, out of all of the Artifacts Monday games I've played, this one is probably second or third easiest for completion.
Wow.
You don't even have to play it on expert mode.
Yay!
And I was like, what? I played it on expert mode anyway because that's what I fucking do. And then I beat it and I was like, wait a second. I only got one achievement.
Where's the expert achievement?
Aww. I thought, oh no, it's glitched. And so then I go looking at the list. It's like, no, dumbass, you have 11 out of 12. You just didn't have to do that. That said, that's the reason I can't say that this is the easiest one. I do have 11 out of 12 achievements because there are collectibles and somehow I missed two. And I fucking hate when I do that. So I guess I get to play it again anyway. Good thing I liked it. But, yeah, it was surprisingly one of the easier ones. I think there's one or two that you can play and don't have to play on expert and don't have to play the bonus chapter. Shout out though, this one, usually if they don't have an achievement for doing the bonus chapter, it's because there isn't one. This one does have the bonus chapter anyway, and I do recommend that you play it because they're really good at what they do. And a little more time with a bonus chapter, even without an achievement, is worth it.
Nice. Well, overall, $15 on Scarlet Mysteries. What are you thinking?
Definitely give it a buy. This is one of my favorite ones that they've released in a while. And I think if you were only ever going to pick up one Artifacts Monday game to get your feet wet with them, this would be the one you should pick up.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it. We're fucking done.
We're done.
We're done.
What are we supposed to do with all this free time?
The thing is, you say free time, but the show's already over 2 hours.
Well, but still,
you've just only been here for a little over an hour of it.
But we've been, like, crossing the 4 hour mark lately.
We haven't crossed the 4 hour mark. We got close. We got like 3.5 to one show, but we didn't get to 4.
The year's not over yet.
Don't even fucking jinx this. The only way it's going to get that big is if we have someone like Mike Micah and Adam Rippon back on the show. I should see what they're doing.
You know, I'm just saying.
True. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Cole, do you have any final words to end it?
No. Can I just say for like the next hour and a half so that we have a properly linked show?
Go ahead. Start.